Welcome, everyone. We're so excited to have you for this very, very special Remembering Who We Are series, How Material Life Doesn't Work, with Dachinandana Swami, who is with us. This is now 5 years that we've been running this program, Remembering Who We Are, for the purpose of understanding that we're not the soul. Sorry, we are the soul. The problem is we have so many things that are telling us that we're not the soul. We're our minds and bodies. But actually, we have to remember and keep focused on the real self, the true self, the eternal soul. And we meet weekly at this time to deepen our connection with the true self. And it's quite an honor at our 5-year anniversary to have this very special experience that we can offer you with Sachinandana Swami. The series itself, How Material Life Doesn't Work, is inspired by the fact that there are so many different messages we're getting all the time to be happy in this world, to enjoy ourselves, to live free as you want. But somehow there's so much trouble and frustration, and it actually obfuscates the reality. The self-orientation and all the messages that we get are obfuscating the true reality, the spiritual reality, that is the most important thing, and where real happiness actually lies, the happiness that we're seeking in all kinds of other ways. And Sachinandana Swami is somebody who, at a very young age, really made a major departure from one paradigm that we're all familiar with, Western material life, to a completely different one. And it came with many, many inspirations and struggles. It's been hard fought and hard won for him to walk the path that he has for the last 50 years, actually more than 50 years. He's been even a monk, a full-time dedicated practitioner for well over 50 years. So we want to rewind to those initial experiences, what it was like to realize what wasn't working about the material paradigm, material life, that is our default, that we're all accustomed to, and what drove him with strength to another way of being, where there are so many gifts that are readily available to all of us, which he has been experiencing and sharing with his very life. So that is the inspiration for this series. He will share a story with us each time over the next 5 weeks, with the exception of the last one, which will be a full Q&A to give everyone as much opportunity as we can to ask questions of Sachinandana Swami. There will also be, within each of these sessions, after he shares his story, he will open it up for questions. And that'll be at about the 45-minute mark, roughly. And then at the top of the hour, 1 o'clock Eastern time, we will let anyone go who needs to move on. That will be the official close of the program. But Sachinandana Swami kindly will stay with us each week for another half an hour to take questions. So your questions are wanted, they're very sacred, and they will be sent to Michael. So Michael Sloyer is raising his hand. Send all of them in a direct message in the chat to him, and then according to time and capacity, we will try to have Sachinandana Swami answer whatever we can. The culture for this series is what we always say at Remembering Who We Are. We want to have full-hearted participation. That means undivided attention, completely present with our hearts and also with our videos on so that we can be together as a community. We understand that for certain situations it may not be possible, but for all of us who can have our video on, let us please do so. It is very helpful for you, for your experience, and for everybody else's experience. Full-hearted participation, respect. This is a safe and sacred space that we have, and we're going to be getting incredibly powerful teachings that have been passed down through the ages by self-realized souls. And we have someone who is so dedicated to this path and so experienced who will be sharing with us. So respect for that sanctity is wanted. And lastly, determination, that we don't want to make this a cool experience that we had on a Wednesday. We want this to be something that has meaning to us for our lives and ideally throughout our lives. That requires something from each of you, determination, that I want to apply what I'm being given here. So if we make that determination right now, this will be a different experience, guaranteed. So your full-hearted participation, respect, and determination, we kindly ask of you. Does that sound good? Thank you so much. And we have people Zooming from around the world, which is very, very exciting. Satchinandana Swami himself is Zooming to us from Germany. He had just wrapped up another retreat in another location, just arrived, and is now with us very humbly and kindly. So with that, I want to turn it over to him. He is also my guru, and it's a profound honor. He's been such a guide for all of us at AppBuild. It's a profound honor to have him with us. I'm super excited to share him with you again for this brand new series. Satchinandana Swami, please guide us. Thank you.
Before starting, I want to just say how I'm honored to again be with you in this Zoom, through the Zoom media. I still remember when during one of my retreats in Belgium, 20 or so of you showed up and enriched the retreat with your inquisitiveness and your spiritual alertness. I remember that, and now we have the same thing on the in this we try to create a community like this here on Zoom. We are dealing with very, very confidential, personal questions, and it's good to celebrate the fact that we are doing it as a community, or we are forming a community as we do this. And I also wish to share very personally, not very formally like I do naturally in some of my programs when a totally unknown crowd is before me. No, I wish that this is vibrant, with a spark of life, so to say. So I will start by paying my respectful obeisances. One thing needs to be said. I noticed a few faces and names, like Priya was there, George, and of course those from the UpBuild team with whom I'm often in contact. Yes, I'm. If I would express what I feel for each single one of you, there would be no talk today, so I don't even start with anyone. Let me start with the session. Namo Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paskatyade Sadarine. Hare Krishna. Our subject today is ecstasy. Oh, to scale it down a little bit on an understandable level, our subject today is how material life does not work. There is an inborn tendency in us that we wish to feel unity with people, harmony. We wish to feel an enrichment in our contact. But unless a person rises from the material platform where he is self-centered to the spiritual level, the other will be an unacceptable scandal after some time. This is how a Russian poet expresses when the consciousness leaves the spiritual ground where we feel unity, where the big mind becomes smaller and smaller and smaller, plagued by covert or overt selfishness. I had a chance to see this very early in my life, when I was perhaps 14 years of age. I'm the son of a director, and we had invited the family from our mother's side. It was seven and their wives or husbands, around 14 people, and of course some children and some other guests, for a family fest. And we had a nice meal. There were amiable discussions. But then my uncle Ulf, these are German names, you may not have them in America, suggested that we take the nice opportunity to talk about the family business that was run by, in German we say Kommanditgesellschaft, a trust where only family members are part. And my father already said, no, let's not do this. We had such a wonderful gathering. Let's not talk about business. But others also thought it was practical to discuss about some major decisions. And so we went into a special, they went into a special room. We children were not allowed. But for a child, when you say no to a child, he feels extremely interested. So I somehow managed to enter that room from the back through the window and hide behind the main sofa. So the family discussion turned now into a business discussion, and I still remember how one of the uncles said, so here we have one rule: anyone who uses a bad word, I think we say a swear word, against the other will be fined with the equivalent of $1,000. When I was hearing this behind my in my hidden place behind the sofa. I went, ooh, this happens to be interesting. It will develop into something interesting, and I was right. I am not 100% sure what was the issue that made everyone boil and swear and counter swear, but I think it was an investment which one of my uncles had done without asking the others in that trust, an investment that was very risky. I think you would say in English a high risk investment. And that would in fact affect everyone in that society. And oh, there was so much discussion. They swore at each other. And finally, one of the uncle left the meeting without 50,000 dollars he had to pay because he used so many bad words. And I still remember to this day, it had become so ugly that even I, who loved sensations and temperament, I felt extremely sad and asked myself for many years, what turned the family meeting into a fratricidal war? The same thing happened at the beginning of the world's biggest wisdom scripture, the Bhagavad Gita. There was a clan, the Kuru clan, a dynasty is perhaps a better word, and due to very, very unfortunate developments, they found themselves on the battlefield, ready to kill each other with deadly weapons. And what happened that turned this family dynasty into deadly enemies who were not shy to kill each other on the battlefield? My dear everyone, what happened in my family and in the bigger picture of the Kuru dynasty is the same thing. Due to material consciousness, we see differences between each other. And although it may be possible for us to mask our differences for some time, after some time, if we don't change the level of consciousness from material to spiritual, there will be conflict. I think in Germany, the divorce rate is now 50%. I'm not sure how much it is in America. I don't know. You know better or don't know at all. What happened? That the concept of we are one, we are united in love, was discarded, and people cannot live with each other and even tolerate the other presence. The poet Bhartrihari, Hari, who's very, very much able to express these things, he's from the 12th century, said, in the beginning we were bound in love and we thought we, then suddenly you became you and I became I, and as a result our interests did not match any longer. And we fell apart from each other. So this rise of the material consciousness will eventually, or this symptom of material consciousness, I wanted to say, will eventually take over. Even if we guard our relationships, like the famous Woody Allen from New York, he said, me and my wife drive different cars, we have different rooms, we eat at different times, and then he says, we do everything to keep our relationship together. You may say, no, Satchinanda Swami, you are a renunciant, you are a monk, you are monks always, the ascetics have a different mindset on relationships than those who are in relationships have. But I don't think it's an exaggeration. If I don't know who am I, spirit, soul, if my partner does not know who he is, an eternal spiritual soul, how can there be understanding and peace? Of course, I can put up rules and I can be civilized and maybe not erupt in swearing like my family did, who, by the way, was known as a very cultural family. Many of the members have now died. My father and his generation are no longer there. But I'm speaking of the inner experience, which gives birth to overt or masked selfishness. Nietzsche used to say, everywhere where I go, there is a dog following me, a dog called ego. And this dog comes even into monasteries, into temples, into ashrams, into families, and certainly into relationships. I want to tell you a story that will make you chuckle initially, but then perhaps cry. In Vrindavan there is a temple, the Krishna Balaram temple, which is well known, I think, to our host and the Apil community. I think they have been there. And there are different priests who have the altar service at different times of the week. There's one priest, let us call him Krishnadas, who has altar service for 2 days in the week. There's another, let us call him Balaramdas, who takes care of the altar and the deities. So one day, so Krishna and Balaram Das, these priests, were locked in a competition. Who makes the best flower arrangements in the altar? They each had their flower person, who had his own flower field, where he would go early in the morning and cut the flowers and then deliver them either to Krishna Das or to Balaram Das, who then would use these flowers in an opulent flower arrangements, not only garlands of the deities, no, the backdrop from flowers, sometimes the entire dress of the deities was in flower. And one day, Krishna Das made such a wonderful flower arrangement that everyone, I have not been there, were just in awe when the curtain opened in the morning and the community looked at the altar. They only managed to say, "Wow!" And Krishna Das outdid himself the next day. And then Balaram, and I heard this from someone who talked to both of them afterwards, thought, "Oh my God, Krishna Das has Krishna Das thought, "Oh my God, I have done now 2 days the most outstanding flower decorations, but I know Balaram, who has the next 2 days on the altar, and his flower person will outdo me because they are so competitive." So Krishna Das did the unthinkable. He hired 3 people who went in the night to the flower fields of the flower person who supplied flowers for Balaram and destroyed the flower fields just so that Balaram could not outdo, Balaram Das could not outdo Krishna Das. This became known to the senior monks, and they asked the two, "How could you become so competitive, Krishna Das? How could you destroy the flowers? The receiver of your flower offering should not be you. It is a God. You're doing this as a service for God. You're not doing this to boost your ego." And Krishna Das was in tears. He was a good person, but he had perhaps not thought about this little sentence. Everywhere where I go, including the temple, a dog follows me called ego. And this dog comes into relationships, into everywhere where they go. How many wars could have been avoided if people would have put the dog, the ego dog, into a cage or let him go into the wilderness or so on? How many wars in families could have been avoided? But in material consciousness, my dear everyone, where I fix my identity in the illusion, I am a German, I am an American, I am a man, I am a woman, I am this or that or the other thing, a student, a professor. The ego is bound to come up because it feeds on material consciousness. It is a byproduct. It is a development from the material consciousness. And it brings about terrible things like, for instance, apartheid. I think you know that Nelson Mandela was fighting against apartheid, the separation of whites and blacks. He had actually considered armed conflict at a time where he wanted to supply strong fire force, strong weapons to his rebellious party of blacks. I just now forgot the name, Group for African Liberation. And as a result, he was captured, imprisoned for 20 long years. And he was subjected to inhuman, most inhuman human treatment. And when he came out, there was an interview asking, where the interviewer asked him if he now hated his imprisoners. The people who imprisoned him really were doing impossible things of humiliation and so on and so on. Let us not go too much into the darkness of the human mind and tell what humans can do to other human beings. And Nelson Mandela said something very, very endearing. He said, I think the question was different. He said, he was asked, is there a difference between the Nelson Mandela who went into prison and who came out of prison? And then he said, yes, the Nelson Mandela who went into prison was full of hatred. This is how it went. But when I left 20 years later the prison, I understood if I would take this spirit of being separate from others due to my skin color and my history and hate those who imprisoned me, then I would still remain in prison, the prison of my ego. Oh, these are good words. And this is happening when you are in material consciousness. I know from my God brothers who have met Nelson Mandela in the Durban temple, how Nelson Mandela came in the temple and saw Prabhupada's image, Prabhupada, the founder of the Spurta movement, which is known as the Hare Krishna movement. And he said, how did he did it? How could he bring together blacks and white? Because he saw in the temple black people and white people were singing together, honoring food together, having community together. And he heard that the same thing was all over the world, people building a spiritual community where outer differences were discarded. How did he do it? And the answer to this question is he helped people to rise from the material level of consciousness to the spiritual level of consciousness. This spiritual level of consciousness is described in the Bhagavad Gita, and for your hearing pleasure, I will try to read, to sing this verse, that you get an idea how beautiful this philosophy is. Philosophy that is to be sung. Very nice philosophy. Vidyavinaya sampane brahmane gavihastine sunichayeva svapakecha pandita samadashina. The humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and also a dog eater. They see with an equal vision, without making these differences the basis of judgment, Different people will behave differently. Different people will think differently. Someone will elect so-and-so as a president. Another will say, how is it possible? I want to elect so-and-so as a president. In the family, someone will say, I like Japanese. No, Japanese is so different eating style, and you have to use these sticks. I like Eskimo style food, and so on. Differences can happen when you want to go to on the bathroom in an urgent mission that does not allow delay, and there is already someone else on a similar mission, but who is very slow and very joyful, and you might then these small things might be the reason this differences for so on. So unless you come to the spiritual level, the we which we have, the unity which we aspire for, the harmony which cultured people wish to create, will break up. Do you know how much the United Nations try for harmony, but how more and more flags appear before their plaza? I have seen in New York, I have seen many places of interest in New York. I've also driven by this and have, there's not so much unity. It is going. I would like to say is something which I will write, which I put in my new meditation book. Once in Africa, there were many children in a village, and one anthropologist wanted to see in which way do they think, perhaps different than that Western people. So he placed a basket of succulent, tasty, mouth-watering oranges under a tree. Then he drew a line, a start line, and asked all the children to run, and whoever would touch the basket of oranges first, he would be the owner of the origins. Or oranges. He would have them all. 1, 2, go, he shouted. But the children did not run. They looked to each other. They took each other by the hand. And in one line, they walked towards the basket, until they all were around the basket and touched it. Later, the anthropologist asked, how could you do this? And the child, one of the children said, Ubuntu, which means we are all connected. He said, if someone is not happy, how can we be happy? Or how can we be happy if we eat the oranges and everyone is, oh, it's so hot. I would love to have oranges also. This concept of we are connected, my dear dear listeners, that's a spiritual concept, because it's the soul, the self, who is a part of God, who is connected. All strifes, all quarrels, all disagreements can come if you park the material consciousness and you rise through your spiritual practice to the higher level, if you can leave the small and narrow mind and enter the vast mind of the spirit, and then you can have what is called sadhu sangha, association with like-minded spiritual people who support each other. My dear everyone, time is running. I have just looked at the wristwatch, but how can I stop here without giving you an experience of what this feeling might look. And I want to invite you for a little meditation. I request you to sit with a straight back in your chair before the computers. You might like to move a little around to get the blood flowing. Some like to shake their hands. Some like to go like this. Just please change a little bit your modus vivendi, the way you live. And, oops, I will make a little sound. I have to ask Hari, Hari Prasad. How is the sound? Is it all right? Should it be less? Should it be louder? Should we drop the sound? Tell me, please.
I think it's low. It's probably being blocked by some Zoom sound filter.
Good. You know Zoom very well. So let me not have it, because there is a sound filter, and if you could not have heard, then it's gone. And we don't need also the sound. So find a comfortable sitting position. Maybe move a little bit around. Aim to sit in a straight position. Maybe you want to roll back your shoulders to increase the volume for breathing in fresh air. You do like this, please. Bring your shoulders to the ears and then roll them back towards the back of the room. And when you're ready, please close your eyes. And open up for an experience of leaving the material mindset behind, where you make differences between you and your friend. And come to the mindset where you feel connected, interconnected with all life. Move your attention to your body. Start by feeling the aliveness in your feet. In New York, many have no connection to the body and the feet. You can just move your feet a little or wiggle your toes and then relax your feet. Good. Move up, releasing tension in your knees. Become just aware of the knees and let them go. Your hips. And your spine. Soften your abdomen, you know, let it just your chest and the shoulders where you carry so much. Just let it all relax. Your arms and hands, yes, relax. Move still further up to your neck, then your head. Relax. And finally, relax your face, starting with the forehead. Please, we all have closed our eyes. You don't need to think how you will look. Just relax. And notice how fully relaxed your body is. Remain relaxed. Oh, some one of you has fallen asleep. I can sense it. No, you remain relaxed, but alert. Now bring your awareness to your breathing. Inhale and exhale through your nose, gently and slowly. Breathe in and out on a silent count of five. Let's do this. One. Let's go in. In one, two, three, four, five. And breathe out on an equal count of five. Do the counting on your own, because we all have our own speeds, and when we start counting and stop, one inhale and so on. For once, take pleasure in your breathing. Should your attention wander, gently bring it back to your breath. Now you're ready to relax even your breathing and appreciate how your mind has settled into a state of inner calm. From this place, tap into the subtle sensations within you. Can you notice the gentle pulse of your heartbeat? Bring your attention to the heart space. Can you? Very gentle heartbeat. Can you feel the warmth flowing through your body, the quiet life force? Now let your awareness expand. Sense that the same life energy that flows in every part of you also pervades all beings. The earth, the trees, perhaps the chirping birds outside, and sense the presence of life in the images which you will hear. First, the graceful waterfall cascading down a high cliff. Sense the life force in the subtle fragrance of the blossoming buds on a cherry tree. In the sounds of birds filling the morning air. Become aware of how nature is fully alive, pulsating with life, and tell yourself, the rhythm of my heart is the rhythm of all life. Now, since the life force, the all-pervading life force, and a young child running joyfully through a field. An old man sitting on the veranda in the evening of his life. A refugee finding rescue and new hope. And a soldier crying tears of desperation. Become aware of the pure joy of the child, the bittersweet melancholy of that old man. The undying hope of the refugee. And the despair of the soldier. And again tell yourself something where you acknowledge how every one of us is connected. Tell yourself the rhythm of my heart is the rhythm of all life. Sense how we are all connected. Remain a little in this space and meditate on the words from the Bhagavad Gita. Everything rests upon the Supreme as pearls that are strung on a thread. Gently connect with this profound truth. All beings and all of nature rest on an invisible thread, the life-giving Supreme Spirit. In your mind's eye, now envision a person you like very much. Perhaps your child, your partner, a good friend. And sense the unity and in your mind's eye now call into your memory a difficult person who sees things so different from you and also there try to see how you are all connected as spirits in this world, as spiritual selves in this world, unified and sustained by the same divine energy. Notice how your awareness expands beyond limits. Dwell a little in this interconnectedness. sense vastness, peace, and yes, joy. Let all this positive feeling sink in a little bit more and pervade your feeling. Let the Supreme Spirit nourish you and rejuvenate you. Rejuvenate you. Good, slow breaths. Let the feeling of being greater than your small mind rejuvenate you. Very good. You're doing very well. We will now end this meditation. Take two deep breaths. Fill your lungs with air and exhale. Gently move your neck and head, perhaps like you see me doing. And sit for a moment or two before you return to the normal consciousness. Good. Wow, even just guiding you in this made me feel so calm and composed. I just had I don't even want to say a huge retreat. And then I visited a professor and I just drove for 6 hours and just could make it on the last breath here before the Zoom thing, but I know I'm not the body, I'm eternal soul. Very nice, very nice. I thank you very much. I'm sorry we have gone a little bit over time, but I just wanted you to try to move in this consciousness. Because we can say so much, but if the danger is that it all remains concepts, we have to make an experience, and meditation is one of the many ways. Thank you, and I will turn it over to our smiling host. I can see you from here. Yes, please.
Thank you so much, Satchinandana Swami. So we will hold our questions. If anyone needs to take off at this time, we will look forward to having you back next week for the continuation of this series, How Material Life Doesn't Work. I think this was well worth it to get the experience. I'm feeling very rejuvenated, as you said, Satchinandana Swami. I hope everyone is experiencing the same. And
the idea is to carry this into relationships. No, that my focus today was very often we look for that ideal relationship, really. But in material consciousness, you look at the statistics, it does not work so easily. And we don't need to talk about the silent desperation behind the closed doors of the homes of the Americans and the Germans and the wherever they are. No, so this is about this, no? Thank you. Thank you. I wanted to make it clear that.
Really appreciate that. Yes. So let us please try to carry this consciousness into our lives and these lessons. If you can stay with us now, we really wholeheartedly welcome you to continue on for now questions for the next half an hour. And thank you again to everyone. Thank you again, Satchinandana Swami, so much for sharing yourself with us.
My honor, my honor.
So you can also just take a minute. If you haven't thought of a question, please do share with Michael Fink about what you've heard and experienced, and share directly with Michael.
His good name is Michael Fink.
Michael Slaughter.
Yes. Franco Foligatti, my God, this is it's a name like a bouquet of flowers, so beautiful.
Hopefully everyone has had a chance. Hopefully everyone has had a chance to think of a question and share with Michael. This is a very, very special opportunity.
I have often noticed this after meditation. We are in a different mindset altogether. Maybe some of you, maybe Hari Prasad or Rasanand, you are always full of ideas. Someone should start the flow, otherwise we are...
I appreciate that. Franca has a very good question. Franca, please, before you head out, this is the time.
Hello. Thank you for this time with us. My question is, why God gave us a ego?
So that we can make a conscious choice to turn to Him and turn away from our own selfish interests. There's a very old story regarding this. God asked the ego, "Tell me, who are you and who am I?" And the ego said, "I am me." And you are you. And we will always be separate. So God put him, this is told in Sufism, into the red fire for 20,000 years. And the ego came back. So tell me now, have you learned something? Who are you and who am me? You are you. And I am myself, and I am very powerful, just like you are. Okay, then God sent him into the white fire. This is more hot, or hotter. For 50,000 years. And the ego came back, and God saw he had not changed. So he decided on another remedy. He ignored the ego. He didn't look in this direction. He didn't ask the ego a question. He totally ignored him, pretending he is not there, or dealing with him as if he was not there. Please excuse me. And after only 20 minutes of this, the ego said, it came back. I have something to say. You are you, and I am your servant. If you want to reduce the ego smaller, make it smaller and smaller, you have to make the choice to ignore it and turn towards the Lord, and you will see the ego will become smaller and smaller. But if you give it too much attention, fighting too much about it, trying to reduce it on your own, giving, just staying with it, either positively, I'm so good, or negatively, I'm so fallen. Both is focus on the ego, and that will make the ego grow. So to make the conscious choice to turn away and fill our mind with spiritual thoughts, that is very helpful. Then we are really, when we pass this test, we are really there. And this idea of free choice can only exist when there is not one choice, but when there are different choices. And this is how we were created. There is one thing the Lord will never ever interfere with, and that's the free choice. Thank you with a beautiful name like a bouquet of flowers. It's for making a choice. You are meant to make a choice. And you and therefore there need to be at least two choices. I mean, more are there, but thank you. Good. Next one of you.
I wasn't sure I heard my name. Hello, Satchidananda Swami.
Yes.
It's lovely to see you again.
I remember you as well. Your good name is, I think, Scott, isn't it?
Yes, thank you.
I remember, yes.
So the question I have is, how might we remain in prayer with anyone who does not feel the interconnectedness you helped us to experience?
Let me ask you, so that I'm sure I fully understand, how can we remain in prayer? Is it where we pray for someone who is so absolutely different and has from the spiritual mindset? Yeah.
Many of us experience disconnectedness from each other in the world now. And what you helped us to experience feels foreign to so many people. And I'm asking your wisdom about how to be with them in a way that feels like an ongoing prayer.
Yeah. You need to really train your equal vision muscle. It's a mindset that comes for most of us with practice. And I would suggest practice it at first with people who are not difficult, who are, and only then slowly extend your circle This is usually done in compassion meditation, when you are giving compassion to others, and also when you pray for others, you extend your circle of prayer almost in concentric circles that build when you throw a stone into a calm lake. If you have ever done this, there will be an expansion of concentric circles. So you first start with those who are near and dear to you. In some ways, in meditations, also in our Gaudiya tradition, interestingly, are done regarding ourselves. We wish well for us. Scott, you would say, have your personal struggles, but I wish that the real Scott, the more spiritual Scott, is victorious over the other parts that run away from reason and wisdom. Yeah, giving yourself encouragement is often good. Then perhaps your family, then the neutral persons, let us say, people you meet when you go for shopping and who are there in the Walmart, yes, and who are cashiers. If you still have the luxuries and not of a real cashier, not a robot. And then extend further to victims of war and fairness, unfairness, and then also to the perpetrators of those who are overcome by such an ignorance and such unfavorable mentality that they turn towards others. This I would call as the high school, the master class. I would recommend really to not jump immediately to that, but start with those who are near and dear and then neutral people. And you will come to a situation that you will be able to embrace the tiger with, you will be able to love the tiger without embracing him. In other words, you will feel connectedness even with difficult people, but you will still not go too close and mingle with them, because you know that might trigger something in them and eventually in you that is not favorable, that not helpful. The healthy distance, however, does not mean that you say like the Russian poet, the other, an unacceptable standard, an unacceptable scandal, I wanted to say. No, you will say, yes, a human being conflicted to an extreme that I wish to never develop, so on. Yes, like that. It's a master class, Scott. Don't start with the highest class. Go slowly. For all of you who have done martial arts, don't start with the black belt. Go first to the yellow or whatever, the white belt or whatever it is. I do not know. I have not studied martial arts. But thank you, and it's so wonderful to see you. Really, so wonderful.
And thank you for the answer to my question. Lovely to see you too.
Our Scott. And when you pray, Scott, first and foremost, before all else, make sure that the real you is praying. So therefore, don't try to, you know, do the things which require a very developed consciousness, because then you only will pray, oh, I think I should do this. I heard this in the upbuilt class. Oh, it won't have any strength when you cannot anchor your prayer into the self. Good.
Thank you.
Dear Lane?
Hello, Achananda Swami.
Hello.
Good to be with you again. Thank you for sharing yourself and your wisdom with us. Always a blessing and a healing. I was so moved by your story about the young children who chose Ubuntu in contrast to competition. And as the auntie to a five-year-old, I would love any guidance that you can offer in terms of feeding in her that consciousness. I know from Scott's question to do, of course, my own work so that I can model that and that can emanate to her, but anything that you can offer in terms of how we engage with the current and younger generation so that competition is not even something they consider. It's just not in their DNA. It's not in their vocabulary. Anything you can offer would be deeply appreciated. Thank you.
There is one important factor when you are training or educating or inspiring any person, young or not so young, and that is you need to consider the environment. And the young people are often hooked to a very competitive society that jumps into their eyes through these games, computer games, and through their, it's a whole culture, and the whole education is like this. But you can break the codex if you understand what is it that makes a young person so competitive or anything. It's a reward system. They feel if I'm acting like this, my environment will say, bravo, 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 you get the first, you get the gold medal here. I was just yesterday in the house of a professor where a young girl was, you know, young, beautiful, bright person, perhaps 9 years of age. And she went into her room and brought 6 medals, which she got in competitions in skiing. Yeah, and then she said to me, and I'm next year I will get 3 more. I'm absolutely sure I will train for that. And I was thinking, she's geared like this or interested like this because the society or the environment or the friends which she have reward such behavior with medals and with applause and with everything. So you need to reward the proper behavior. And I do know this in my case. I'm happy that I could learn under a spiritual teacher who is no longer with us, and under spiritual mentors. And whenever they saw a competitive behavior in me that was not appropriate, you know, where I wanted my ego to be glorified, they They didn't appreciate it. I heard, for instance, how there was one of my one monk who was able to offer a huge donation of $200,000 to the building of a temple. And he came into the room of my spiritual teacher, and in a very arrogant, self-satisfied way, in New York you would say he was so full of himself, he just put this amount of money in cash, bang, on the table, for you, you know. And my spiritual master got up, did not even look at him once, and left the room, showing that he did not appreciate this mentality at all, and he was not prepared to further that by either praising him or even taking them. That donation. So I heard this. I was not there in the room, but I heard about it, and it looked so much like the things I had heard. Yes, my spiritual master also sometimes inspired us, try to do the best for Krishna. But what he was very allergic to was this ego, the dog called ego. Oof, he was relentless in putting us in place. He was not he was a gentleman, but then he could become quite strong and stern. And if you have such teachers, then you feel, oh, I'm rewarded if I'm more humble or modest. And if you can do this with your five-year-old. Was it a five-year-old one? That little child whom you wish to train, reward the type of behavior with attention, with love, and so on. When some mistake is made, you may say, "Oh, my dear child, I know this mentality will bring people against each other. It's not, there's room for improvement." Gentle with children, we are always gentle, no? Yeah, this is what I can say as someone who, I don't have any children, but I know from helping others to grow in spiritual life, you need to reward what they do good and not pay so much attention all the time to what they do bad.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Varsha, this will be the last question.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it's so good to have you here. My question was, does the ego make us fit into a narrative that makes us feel more accepted and makes us shut part of ourselves as a result?
That make us feel more accepted, and then what?
So what I'm trying to say is, does the ego make us feel like to fit in into a role? Like let's say I want to fit into the role of being a devotee.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I would shut parts of myself that are not real and that would not look like a devotee.
Now I understand. Now I understand 100%, Barsha. And I can now give the answer. Yes, the ego has many disguises. And when he enters with someone, if you come into the association of devotees, you know what behavior is valued. And then the ego will try to say, I'm the most humble devotee, the most kind devotee, and so on, and make you believe all this narrative, really. Therefore, in spiritual circles, I come to a very important part now. It is important that we tell each other the truth in the gentle way. See, the way society develops, I've seen it in all countries where I am, including America, is that people just say niceties to each other all the time, because then it's comfortable to live. You don't have to deal with the protest of someone else, and you don't go deep. How was the event? Nice. And I read your social media post. Wow. And you know, all this flattering. Perhaps to get some advantages. But what goes out of the window when we do this is the possibility to learn, the possibility to grow, the possibility to even help each other. I have seen this, and I'm very in the happy situation that when I come, for instance, to an English-speaking country, since English is not my mother tongue, I can get away with saying anything. And they all like my cute German accent and so on. And I like to render this service to others, because I feel it is very important that we give impulses and inspirations instead of just coming to the lowest common denominator by praising each other and so on. So yes, you're right. Our ego can take on many disguises. There's an unlimited unlimited number of costumes in the wardrobe of the false ego. An unlimited number of masks, costumes, and so on. But the false ego, we have to see that our relationships to others will grow out of this. In material consciousness, this ego is nurtured, and it will always, always, always ruin relationships. And then we are not happy inside, we are suffering, either loudly or silently, and as a result our life is compromised, and even we have no time to think of spiritual things because we are suffering so much. And relationships, my dear, if I ask you one question, what is the greatest source of joy? Many will say relationships. If I ask the question, what is the greatest source of misery? The same people will say relationships. So material consciousness, material life does not, has always this mixed pleasure and pain in it from relationships. And this will only go if you go to the spiritual platform. Thank you very much. Let us give the concluding words to our Hari Prasad. I just was together with one Hari Prasad. I gave a seminar, so you are Hari Prasad. Yes.
Thank you for giving me my name. Very grateful to everyone for staying afterwards. And we encourage you to continue coming up with questions as you get to hear from Satchinandana Swami in the coming weeks. We will also have you share with Michael, as we did here, much more to come on this series, How Material Life Doesn't Work. And hopefully we'll all get a tangible personal sense of what does work, how we can take spiritual steps, as Satchinandana Swami is sharing with us from his own very realized place. Thank you again. We're wishing you a wonderful week, and thank you so much, Satchinandana Swami, for being with us. It's a tremendous honor.
All the best for everyone.